somebody's going to be checking on you. So it's just one big happy family, really.
Green Country Village Retirement Community, 1025 Southeast Swan in Bartlesville. Phone 918-335-2086.
Teacher pay, school vouchers, support of schools, charter schools, homeschools, vouchers, and more. Sure to be issues not only for the next few weeks and months, but for years to come. Welcome to our broadcast of the Public Forum, sponsored by Public Education Advocates for Kids, or PEAK. Seats are filling in the Bartlesville City Council chambers. You'll hear League of Women Voters President Pat Netzer as she moderates tonight's forum. Legislative team representing Bartlesville and the surrounding area will answer the questions from you. State Senator Julie Daniels, State Representatives Earl Sears, and Travis Dunlap will provide the answers. We invite you to submit your written questions at City Hall or go online to the PEAK Facebook page and ask your questions. Now, tonight's PEAK Forum on AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1.
Good evening and welcome to our forum from Bartlesville City Council Chambers. And I think we have exceeded standing room only for this crowd tonight. Pat Netzer-Willard is making her opening statements here, and we will get set in just a moment. This organization, PEAK, is a local grassroots all-volunteer organization speaking out for quality public education in Bartlesville and throughout the state. They are not part of any other group, and they are not asking for money. They are urging you to help them with their advocacy effort. Pat Netzer-Willard of the League of Women Voters is the moderator for tonight's forum and the broadcast tonight on K1, as well as also on Cable One and on a Facebook Live from the Bartlesville Examiner Enterprise. Thanks for joining us. Let's join Pat Netzer-Willard.
Say thank you and welcome on behalf of all of us. I don't know if we'll all be able to get this kind of a comment. This is a great turnout. I know we're on TV and I know we're on radio, so thank you all for coming out tonight. Anytime you can share and inform people what's going on in your state government, I always think it's a great idea and a good event. So thank you for being here. Very quickly, I want to respond to something. There was a letter in the editor when I came home last Thursday of our last town hall meeting, and I believe the young lady that asked the question either misunderstood our response, but I need to clarify that because I started to write a letter to the editor, but I knew there'd be a room full and TV and radio, and I want to respond to that. First of all, the question was about gambling. There are two gambling situations in the state of Oklahoma. There's lottery and there's the casinos. The lottery, we collect about $69 million a year. It is split about 45% of that. Those funds go to public education. It's always about $31, $33 million. It always goes there. The other one we gain from casino gambling, about $120 million. The tribes, we have no control over that money. That money belongs to the tribes. And then in the meeting last 2 weeks ago, we made it very clear that the tribes are very, very generous to all of their communities. Specifically, I talked about the Cherokees, what they do with their health care, what they do with partnering with county government. They do a phenomenal job. So I don't know where the misunderstanding happened, but that is a question that might come up tonight, but I just wanted to clarify that. Now, your state budget. We are working every day in regards to the budget. It's a constant moving target. There's meetings constantly. On Thursday, I was probably in three of them. The day before, I was in about five meetings over the budget. The Senate's working. The House is working. At the end of the day, what we're striving on, we can tell you today that we are looking at apportionments off the to help us balance this budget. And let me back up. There's about $870 million hole. But with all the other things that we need to fund to help us in our budget, it really goes up to about $1.2 billion. And that is ad valorem reimbursement, the flex benefits, payment on the bonds for the refurbishing of the capital. I'll stop there. It takes that number up to about $1.2 billion. So we are coming up with ideas to balance the budget. And quite frankly, what's out there is the standard pools of money, the rainy day fund, cash forward. Some of the revolving funds, we'll tap into them. The other three, we're making reform and apportionments off the top. I'll just leave it as reform and tax credits. We've already passed about five of those last week. We have about five more next that I know we'll do on Monday, and probably a couple of more before the week is over. And the other one would be tax raising measures, and I'll tell you the four that are being discussed at the Capitol. One of them I don't believe will go anywhere, but I'll still mention it. But the four that has had serious consideration is raising revenue on cigarettes through a cigarette tax. The other one is gasoline tax. And then there is one that, again, I don't think will go anywhere, is eliminating the itemized deduction. Now, let me back up. The cigarette tax is about $200 million. The gasoline tax, about $220 million. And if we do away with itemized deduction, that's about $230 million. And then the other one that is seriously being discussed and reviewed is oil production apportionments or taxes that they pay on oil and gross production. And that discussion is just everywhere. And there will probably be some questions that will come up on that tonight. But those are the four big ones, and that number could range from 20 million to 100 million in regards to how that could possibly come out. So that's what we're doing. It's a challenge, and there's no question it's a big, major hill to climb. But at the end of the day, we will have a balanced budget because by the Constitution, we have to do that. So that's where we are on the budget. So I think the rest of the night is we just take questions. Is that correct?
Well, more or less, we go in order, Earl, and you were first.
Okay.
And so now the next first person will be Senator Daniels. Since I'll finish now my statement, since you already ran over one of my questions. Okay, the usual thing is the questions will be asked in a rotating order. I don't ask the same person first all the time. And they have 2 minutes to respond, and there's a nice timekeeper there, and she will go down to the last 30 seconds, and then she will stand up and raise a stop sign, and then I will get up and beat them over the head. Okay, now, the questions in order. All right, we have several topics, and there are stacks of questions for each one. So, beginning with Senator Daniels. When you are elected as a senator or representative, you are sworn to represent all the people of your district, not just those who voted for you or contributed to your campaign. Do all of you feel, all of your representatives and politicians sitting here, feel that you are living up to your oath to serve all the people of your district? And
thank
how
you.
Do you do that?
Thank you, and thank you all for being here this evening. And I see Superintendent McCauley out there and Superintendent Lyndall Fields. Are there other school leaders here from other districts in the district? Okay, very good. I took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and the state, and certainly intend to follow through with that. I've been down there a couple of months, and I represent, I think, about 77,000 people. And in a representative form of government, that means that we will all be on the same side and on different sides of different issues, given whatever the issue is, whatever given issue it is. So I certainly pride myself on listening and following through and studying both sides. I think one of the blessings of having a legal education is that you do naturally argue both sides with yourself. And I do that on things that I believed for a long, long time. I constantly check myself again. This is what I believe. Now, has anything happened that should make me change that? So certainly I can't always vote the way everyone would like, because if we had a system like that, well, we would all be down there voting. As I used to tell Boy Scouts in Citizenship in the Community, and I know you guys are back there tonight, the difference in a representative system is that we can't have everybody vote, or we would never get anything done. So our founders decided a representative republic would be the best way to go, and that's certainly proved true for, you know, over 200 years. So that's what I employ, but it doesn't mean that we will always agree, but it means that I will always listen and study and make sure that when I do cast a vote, it is not done out of ignorance.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. Representative Dunlap, the same question.
Thank you very much. And since this is my first time to speak, let me add my gratitude to having me here and having this forum where we can talk about these things. I really appreciate it. And I see so many friends in the room, and so that's really nice. It's really nice to be part of a community where so many people are engaged and so many people I'm close to. So thank you all very much. I have to make a comment. I can't pass it up. Julie, it's the legal education that makes you argue with yourself, you said? That explains a lot, actually. I think we can reinterpret some history going through with that paradigm. Now, the question had to do with representing all of my constituents. So that comes across in very practical ways, and then of course, not all of the constituents agree. So at some point, you need to represent what you presented to your constituents as you are campaigning. And so the extent to which you can serve your constituents with the office, I feel like I've been blessed to be able to do that. As needs arise, as people have issues with our agencies, that's part of the weight of the office, is to be able to use that weight wisely and serve all constituents. And so that doesn't matter. Most of those issues are non-political. And then when it gets to making decisions on your behalf, I'm going to make decisions with the paradigm that I presented to you all as I was running for office. And so I don't shy away from that. And I've had to defend that at many times to people who disagree. But I wouldn't say, I've matured and changed in some very specific things, some issues, gained some broader perspective, but those guiding principles are still there. And so I believe that that's what I've been asked to represent.
Thank you, Representative Dunlap. Representative Sears.
Thank you. We all have a core set of principles, and I think that when you elected us, we advertised those, we told you about them, we communicated them to you. I faithfully carry those principles at the Capitol. The state, a House member represents 37,500 people. You're not going to please everybody, but I faithfully try to carry out my duties and gain knowledge, gain wisdom, constantly reviewing, looking for information. When something a major issue comes before me, you reserve the right to gain more information. If you change that position, you can, and always for the well-being of the people. So I think it's just a fair balance in regards to making sure you're getting good information and trying to make sure you're moving Oklahoma forward as the principles that guide me.
Thank you, Representative Sears. All right, Mr. Dunlap, you have the next question, and it's about teacher pay. Oklahoma ranks 49th in the United States for teacher pay. We are not competitive with the surrounding states. The writer says you can easily fact check this. It's not surprising Oklahoma is losing teachers. It's easy to say. We want a pay raise. Where would the money come from?
Okay, there are several different ways that question could have gone, and then we saw where we wanted to go at the end. First of all, we need to make sure that we're understanding that across the nation, teachers everywhere are not paid as they should be paid. I was blessed with the opportunity to live overseas for a while, and teachers as a cultural problem don't get the respect from our culture that they used to, and that was I saw the accentuated difference when I lived overseas, how much respect from the community teachers get, and for whatever cultural reasons, they're not getting that same respect that they used to now. And so that's a much broader issue. Pay is a very small part of that. I do support a teacher pay raise increase, or a teacher pay raise, forgive me. And the House has a plan. We call it the 1-2-3 plan. And I support that. And so we are in the midst now. The House is committed to that plan, and we're in the midst now of looking for revenue sources. Some of the things that I have supported in that effort is the removal of exemptions and deductions. I believe part of my tax and governing philosophy is that everybody has some in the game, so to speak. So I don't believe in using governmental representation to give out favors or exemptions or what have you. And so if we're going to increase revenue to the state without affecting our economy and the commerce that we all enjoy as part of our free market, then we're going to keep rates low, but then eliminate handouts, eliminate deductions, eliminate exemptions. And so that's what I've supported, and we've had several votes along those lines in recent weeks. It's been encouraging.
Thank you, Representative Dunlap. Representative Sears.
Thank you. Teacher pay raise is long overdue. We developed a small working group, myself and about 10 others. We've been working since we left session last year, started in June. We made several recommendations. We looked at all kinds of proposals. The one that we settled on is the one that Representative Dunlap just mentioned. It is absolutely a priority in the House of Representatives. It's on our budget. We're doing everything in our power to make sure that we implement it. To tell you how we're going to pay for it, there's really nothing you can add, place to that. You just need to know that like what revenue measure we raise or whatever credits that we eliminate or we reform, the money will be there. It's that if we make it a priority and we want to fund it, and we will fund it. Right now, that particular priority is still in the budget, and the House of Representatives, we're doing everything in our power to make sure that stays in the budget and that it's funded for our teachers. Again, long overdue.
Thank you. Senator.
Thank you. And I, too, support the framework for the teacher pay raise that's in House Bill 1114. It hasn't come to the floor of the Senate yet. It's still in progress. I don't know that I'm that confident that revenue will be there for it yet this year. It depends on the rest of the budget. I still believe that the best source of a guaranteed dollars for teacher pay raise is rolling back the zero emission tax credit. We fought long and hard, all three of us, to at least get it sunsetted early so that we will stop bleeding that money in July of this year. But the payout over the next decade is quite incredible. And as a taxpayer, it irritates me that there are people suggesting we should tax people more while we are writing checks to an industry that we helped get started and it's doing very well. And I don't see how we can ask you for more money and turn right around and write a check out to them when I would rather see that money go to education and other functions of government. So as we get to crunchy time, will there be more of a push to revisit that? House and Senate leadership say no. I have a class of 13 freshmen who are flexing our freshman muscle, and we are engaged more and more in conversations about how to really address tax credits, particularly that very large one, before looking at tax increases. Also, we have voted for the trigger, to remove the trigger. That was a concession I made as a fiscal conservative, to remove that trigger so that from here on out that tax rate remains at, is it 5.25? Thank you, 5.25%. I'm gratified that we have brought in more income tax revenue with each drop in that percentage, except for the part there in the recession. Okay, and I'm stopping now.
Hold on just a second. What'd you, tell me that again, what'd you say, drop to what?
Isn't it now 5.25?
No, it's 5% right now, and it would drop to 4.85.
Okay, so we put
that in my head like
so it's
going to
stay at 5.
Oh, we're all learning here. Okay.
Well, we all learn from
next question, Mr. Representative Sears. It's about taxes. Our state policy has been to lower taxes and not raise them, even in times of economic crisis. Given that this policy caused Kansas economy to crash, what would be the first taxes we could raise when the same thing inevitably happens here? You might disagree with that or not. Would you support including increasing the gross production tax, which is currently the lowest in the country? We begin with Mr. Sears.
Yes. Well, there's several questions in that. Let's back up. First of all, I disagree with the premise that the reduction of the rates that we did caused some of our problems. There's no question it was less money. So every time we lowered it, more money came in. But however, and I gave a speech, in fact, I was the author of the bill to repeal that tax, that income tax trigger. It's just at this particular time with the economy the way it is, we feel very confident, very comfortable rolling that trigger or taking that trigger off. So that's the reason why we did that. Now, as far as any of the initiatives you just mentioned, I have absolutely no problem in reviewing the gross production in regards to those rates. I didn't vote for the one that's in place now, 2% for 36 months, and it goes to 7. I did not support that. I wanted that to be a little bit more. I thought I knew it would bring in more money. My proposal in the group that was with me, so I didn't support that one. So I feel very comfortable in reviewing that, but that's what I was referring to in my opening remarks. I can't tell you tonight where that plan is. I mean, we're just discussing numerous plans, maybe making it 2% and reducing it from 36 months to 12 months. In fact, whoever wrote that letter to the letter editor tonight, that's an excellent article in regards to gross production. Anyway, I'll stop there. I mean, there's numerous positions. And so I will be, not only will I keep an open mind, but I absolutely have no problem reviewing those taxes for our gross production.
Thank you, Mr. Sears. Senator Daniels.
Thank you. I continue to read on a variety of suggestions. I'm not nearly as well-versed in all of this, particularly gross production tax, as Representative Sears. Just today, I read a paper that suggested that we need a statewide property tax dedicated to education. You already use property tax for career tech and your local school district and your county, but it was suggesting we needed a new revenue stream because, of course, unlike other state agencies, education does benefit. When the economy is good, education benefits from income tax, sales tax, motor vehicle tax, gross production tax. So the revenue streams available to education when there are lots of jobs and we have a growing economy is really very good. So to look for new sources of revenue, there aren't many other places you could go, but I was reading a paper today on property tax. Now there's another way to look at this. We do need to grow our economy. That is why we are in the situation we're in. We've heard more job losses here recently, which is very sad, but things have bottomed out. The Federal Reserve was in the Capitol just 2 weeks ago telling us that we're out of the recession, things are coming back, oil and gas play in Oklahoma is very strong, agriculture is lagging. All these things have to do with taxpayers paying revenue that then go to education and other services. So, but while those things are slow to improve, we need to look at good governance. And we, this past couple of weeks, have passed out of the Senate a half dozen good governance bills that have to do with education. They have to do with audits, they have to do with revisiting the school formula, they have to do with revisiting the per pupil expenditure and how we compute that. What about our teacher retirement, making sure we keep it whole? What about the benefits, which have just ballooned by hundreds of millions of dollars over the past few years, and they are sometimes counted in what we spend on education and sometimes not. So a variety of things to look at.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. Mr. Dunlap.
Thank you. I might actually look over your shoulder to remind myself of what the question was originally about. But taxes in general, in a time of recession, we have to remember that the revenue into the state is low because the taxpayer revenue is low. And if we forget that, then we're going to put a blanket on economic vitality in the state. And so I don't think that this is a time to become more dependent upon revenue confiscated from the free market participants in our state. I think that's a bad way to go forward. Is that an easy answer to give you? No, it's not, because the taxpayer is usually the one who is looked to pick up the slack. I just want to be very, very careful about any tax increase at all. Gross production tax is complicated by an issue that several people in this room probably know a lot about, which is the issue between horizontal wells and vertical wells. Right now in Oklahoma, we have different tax rates for horizontal wells and vertical wells, and there's been a year-by-year problem-solving contingent that has been trying to come to a solution about how to regulate the different ways in which we get oil out of the ground, how we produce the oil. And as the industry works that out in our state law, we're very hesitant to change any of the tax on it. And so it has to converge. The working out of the law and how they're going to work out the mineral rights and everything between vertical and horizontal wells, along with this issue of the gross production tax, it all kind of has to converge into a big package that we can look at as a funding stream.
Thank you, Representative Dunlap. Ms. Senator Daniels mentioned the audits, and that was a question directed just to you, though the others may comment after if you choose. Senator Daniels has filed three bills concerning a performance audit of Oklahoma State Department of Education, Oklahoma Regions of Higher Education, and the Oklahoma Department of Career and Technology. What is the cost of the audit, and where is there money to fund it? What are you going to do with the results?
Thank you so much for the question. So this has evolved. This is now the Agency Performance and Taxpayer Accountability Act. My two one-page bills to do a performance audit of the State Department of Education and Career Tech. Career Tech does a financial audit every single year. We pulled the one for higher ed for now. But mine have now been combined into a more comprehensive bill. authored by the speaker and the pro tem, but I'm gratified that over the past 2 weeks I was asked to come and take three or four different bills and sit and work to craft one bill. This, as written now, would be paid for out of the budget of the House and the Senate, so we would have to appropriate money to do that. And I believe the estimate over the next few years would be, oh, I hate to pick a number out of thin air. I'll say north of a million, but I won't say two, because I can't actually remember. But this would set up a commission to do requests for proposals and scope of service agreements with outside firms to do comprehensive performance audits of the top 10 spending agencies, which of course would include Common Ed, and then they would have the authority to audit other agencies. This would go over a number of years, and they would report findings and recommendations, and if some of those needed to go into statute, the legislature could take care of that, and there would be constant updates about the implementation of the savings. And so I'm very pleased that that has become a more comprehensive bill, but it has not yet come to the floor of the Senate, and I imagine it'll end up in a conference committee. Yeah. Thanks for the question.
All right. Then we're moving on to the next question, which we'll begin with Representative Dunlap, and it relates to science and education. The Oklahoma Science Education Act would allow teachers to present personal opinion as scientifically supported facts in a science class. Would you commit to voting for or against this piece of legislation?
Okay, I'll try to catch everybody up. There's a Senate bill, and I think it's Senate Bill 383, or maybe 393, Nathan?
393.
And it is the late Representative Brumbaugh's bill, along with Senator Burkean's bill. And what that bill is asking is that when there is science that has been legitimately questioned, it gives the teachers opportunity to present those legitimately brought up questions about, well, against, I guess, established theories taught currently. So the questioner, I think, puts in a little bit of their commentary by calling them personal opinions. And so I think the real question is, does science improve with this or does science disapprove? Well, I think I come from more of the disposition that I think the role of science is to constantly question and to seek truth. And so if that's the role of science, I wouldn't want to be afraid of science being presented in the classroom. So if it's science that's being presented that questions well-established theories in the educational community, well, then we use science to question science. If it's not science, then don't. So that bill, I'm not sure what's going to happen with that bill, because I believe leadership is now considering what to do in light of the late Representative Brumbaugh's death.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dunlap. Representative Sears.
Thank you very much. I don't support this particular bill. I happen to believe the two districts that I represent in public education.
Oh, we're taking away time for questions.
I believe the school districts I represent do a great job in making sure that if that issue comes up, that it is handled well. If a student chooses to feels they're uncomfortable with some particular lesson in regards to a scientific concept, I can assure you when I was the principal of Central Middle School, that child was given the option to have an alternative assignment. I think the State Department of Education has a well-defined plan as well. Don't ever forget, this is Oklahoma. It's a very conservative state, and I don't feel threatened that something is going to be jeopardized in the classroom. I can only speak for Bartlesville and Collinsville, Oklahoma. I feel very comfortable with the instruction going on in the science classrooms. That bill comes before me, it will not receive my support.
Thank you, Senator Daniels.
Yes, so I voted for 393, and I'm seeing it from sort of a different point of view, not as reactionary, but defensive of the First Amendment, which has been under assault. But
please
what,
don't do
what
that.
I want to say
that. Takes
about
time away from the questions.
Representative Sears mentioned children who might be uncomfortable or their parents uncomfortable with teaching certain things in science. I was actually approached by a group of students before I went to the floor that day, having carefully read the bill. And the bill, it doesn't say you're going to teach anything other than science. It simply says that as part of a class discussion, if various topics come up, they can be addressed. And I thought that's what teaching and education was all about. But the students who came to me said, you have to vote against this bill because, and I'm almost directly quoting the young man, if you pass this bill, this will stop me from telling my teacher when she teaches me incorrectly. That's why I voted for the bill, because we need teachers and students to have back and forth on all these issues. I happen to believe that the miracle of life and creation is encompassed by the theory of evolution, that God's hands in everything, whether it's evolution or whatever else you want to talk about. So that's why I voted for it. I had no problem with it. And reading the actual words in the bill, they were fairly straightforward and not at all outlandish to me. So, yeah, I did support it, but you're right. I don't know if it'll go any further or not.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. All right, we had a question, which you answered part of. It was related to the casinos, and I had a question, and they, further down in the question about without an explanation, the person wanted to know, is there somewhere as a citizen we can go to see how much and what percentage of the revenue actually goes to the schools by the year, and what percentage did it account for in the school budgets? Do you know that, Earl? That was directed to you.
Oh, yeah. The answer to that question is yes. I can't give you the website, but we have that. I mean, when this meeting is over, I still couldn't give it to you, but give me your number and I will call you. Travis may have the website, but yes, we have all that information, but I'm just going to give you the round numbers again. We were, people of Oklahoma, it was a state question. You were sold that if we passed the lottery, that $300 million a year would come into public education. Well, it didn't happen. It's a long history. They had to keep modifying those numbers. Since the first day of the lottery, the most money we've ever collected for public education was, the highest number was $69 million. 45% goes to public education, 45% goes to higher education, 5% goes to teacher retirement, and 5% goes to a consolidation fund. So of that 45% that public education receives, it ranges anywhere from $31 to $33 million every year that goes to public education, and every dime of it goes to public education.
Thank you, Mr. Sears. Ditto. Ditto. All right. The next question, beginning according to my notes, starting with Senator Daniels, it relates to vouchers. If a valid poll was conducted that showed the majority of voters in your district were not in favor of school vouchers, they want to know, how would you vote, yes or no, and explain your answer?
Thank you. That depends entirely on the legislation. There was no education choice bill heard this year, so no vote was cast. I've been a believer in parental education choice for a long, long time. We have pockets in our state of below or failing or badly performing schools, particularly in minority neighborhoods in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, where I believe the poorest of the poor should have an alternative. And that's why I support parental education choice. The statewide polls on this issue show a majority of Oklahomans do favor parental education choice, and the percentages vary depending on what kind of program you're talking about. But I can't commit that I would vote against one or for one. It depends on the bill. The one offered this year I thought was very clearly written and limited in scope, and it was designed to help, again, the poorest of the poor in the three largest counties in Oklahoma, where there is the largest concentration of underperforming schools, where you can have a minority child go all the way through their public education going to underperforming schools. And I think as an Oklahoman and a parent and a taxpayer, I would like to see options for those parents who wish to access them, because it's all about the education of individual Oklahoma children.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. Vouchers, Representative Dunlap. Yes, vouchers.
Thank you for the question. I have never taken a vote on school choice matters. It's only in the House in my 3 years there, only made it to committees. None of those committees I've ever served on. This year, there's not any sort of school parental choice bill that we're dealing with. The senator made reference to that. And so this is in the realm of ideas, in the realm of theory. and I don't know of any specific plans in the future. We have to define vouchers. I don't like using the term vouchers. That tends to have a bit more baggage associated with it. I like to use the term ESAs, or education savings accounts. And the key ingredient to education savings accounts is that it's the parent who has control of the resources. Not free-for-all control, it's resources that are going to be designated for educational purposes. But that's the key ingredient to what the direction I think needs to be moved forward in. There are issues that need to be addressed as we consider that as an option. Issues such as, how do you calculate the amount of resource that goes to that student? How do you prevent students from being counted twice in the system, and then in this new system that may be set up? So there's some issues to address going forward. That's why the details are incredibly important. And I can't say one way or the other right now, because there's no specific legislation or policy in front of me right now. But the key is that the parents have the resources and the choice.
Thank you, Representative Dunlap. Representative Sears.
Thank you very much. I do not support school vouchers.
Could you save your typing for at the end of the forum, please?
But there's a but here. There's a but. I represent Bartlesville and I represent Collinsville, and both of these school districts are a phenomenal school district. I absolutely believe it's imperative that we have a strong educational system, and the state government makes sure that we continue to have a strong educational system. However, I'm going to make it perfectly clear. I am very frustrated that we have schools in our state that continue to fail. That is unacceptable. If there is a plan before me that would help move those students out of those failing schools, I would give that a very serious consideration. And I have told all of my administrators, both in Collinsville and here in Bartlesville, that that is my position. I do not have that plan before me right now, but just because we absolutely have to address that. Senator Ford and I put a plan together that if a school was failing, that the State Department, after I think it was the fourth year, the State Department of Education would come in and take over the school. And we still haven't seen what they do is they just move things around in these schools. But again, I've never encountered a failing school in the districts that I represent. So again, I'm not real supportive of school vouchers. But again, we absolutely must always have a conversation and dialogue in regards to reform on those schools that are failing. And I will look at any option before me and would support it if it will correct, improve, and enhance a failing school.
All right, we are ready to start with Representative Dunlap. And I have several questions in that. You may notice that your specific question worded the way you want it does not come out of my mouth. It's because I have about 8 questions about each topic, and I'm trying to get as many varieties as possible out. The next question is about consolidation of school districts. So if we consolidate, the proposal is, and I have about 4 questions here about consolidating, will it help the bottom line as far as finances go, and is it good for the students to consolidate into large districts?
Thank you for the question. Consolidation is something we need to do as a state. We're ranked number 11 in terms of school districts in the country. We have 516 school districts. Each one of those has a school board, administration, things like that. 55% of our personnel within the school system in Oklahoma is non-teaching personnel. If we lowered that just to the national average of 49%, we could have a teacher pay raise. And so this is an issue that needs to be looked at. We can't ignore it anymore. And so we need to move forward with some sort of wise proposal. The best way, in my opinion, to move forward in that direction is to put some sort of incentive for local citizens and local school boards to make those decisions on their own. I don't think that we'll do a good job making those decisions in Oklahoma City. So we need to have some sort of incentive so that those decisions are made locally.
Thank you, Representative Dunlap. Representative Sears, consolidation.
Thank you. This has been around for quite some time. It is something we absolutely have to address, but you need to know that is easier said than done. There's hundreds, well, I shouldn't say hundreds of millions, there's a large amount of money that could be routed back to when you do more consolidation. But again, that is, it's just easier said than done. You have members that may have 25 school districts, all of them being rural, and they're not going to go back to their communities and go to closing down schools. It's a very tough vote. It's a very tough decision. But on the same token, we absolutely have to come to grips with it, because we do have, in my opinion, far too many school districts that, and in certain areas, they could be consolidated. I will tell you, we passed a bill, it was a Senate bill, we just voted on it last week, to form a committee to, I'll call it a Blue Ribbon Committee, an Education Committee, doesn't make any difference. Speaker appoints someone, governor appoints someone, it's going to be a big deal to look at this issue in regards to not only consolidation, but in regards to other things, what we can do to help develop reform and in funding for public education. But consolidation is absolutely one of those. I'm all for it, but I'll be the first to tell you, it is just not an easy concept, and it's not an easy issue to tell you today that we're just going to do this. So when you go to telling that you're going to close school X and close B and consolidate them, it has huge ramifications.
Thank you, Representative Sears. Senator Daniels.
Thank you. That may be Senate Bill 514, Shared Administrative Services Act, which has come out of the Senate already. So I represent several rural school districts. Now, in the great scheme of things, Bartlesville may even be considered rural at the state level. But as I said to rural superintendents over a year ago, you're easy pickings. You're out there where everybody can see you and assess how much you're paying per pupil for your administration thing, whereas the 9 largest school districts in the state spend the bulk of the administrative dollars, and nobody ever looks at maybe they could better spend their money and drive down administrative costs. So early on in one of our conversations with some Bartlesville School Board members and administrators who asked me about consolidation, I said, why don't you call all the superintendents and school board members in Washington County and get together and see how you can start sharing services? You don't necessarily have to do away with a district, although ultimately that might be a good thing. You certainly don't have to close school sites. Look at what you've got in Caney Valley. You've got the elementary school in Osheladen, and you've got the middle school and high school in Ramona. There are lots of creative ways that the smallest geographical county in Oklahoma could be the poster child for shared services, streamlining, consolidation, without the state coming in a heavy-handed approach. And I'd like to work towards that. I know that I've watched the moms line up in the minivans in Foyle, Oklahoma, where they have a dependent school district. I know that that school site is critical to that little community. And people want to live in rural Oklahoma because there's some quality there that some of those folks don't even see in a place as big as Bartlesville. I don't want to see that go away. I want rural Oklahoma to be a place where people want to come and live, and schools are key to that. But as Representative Sears and Dunlap said, it is a huge problem in terms of money. How can you maximize your dollars? So I'm not sure that the state's ready to do this, but I sure wish school boards and superintendents would start having these meetings and do the local control thing we all talk about.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. All right, the next one, we have a lump and dump all about oil and gas, state budget, and Earl, it's your turn. Your expertise is going to show. Okay, the questions are we willing to raise taxes for oil and gas? Is the current financial crisis caused by a drop in oil and gas taxes? Should we change the budget so it's not tied to oil and gas?
Well, I wouldn't change the budget that's tied to oil and gas. I wouldn't change that. But again, as I said in my opening statement, and I think I mentioned earlier, there is a conversation. There is negotiations going on. I honestly cannot tell you today. What I've just told you is the most I can tell you, because I can't tell you there's a plan of X or a plan of B or a plan of C. I just can't tell you that. What I can tell you, there is conversation in regards to, on the House side, numerous members want gross production and those percentages. They want that reviewed. I say they. I'm included in that. We want to have a thorough review. I think it was just, what was that? When the Tuesday night we had that lengthy, mm-hmm. It was Tuesday night, probably had about a 2.5-hour budget meeting, and probably close to half of the conversation in that meeting was about gross production. So again, I just can't give you a detailed plan, but you need to know there is discussion. But you also need to know the oil industry is pushing back just as hard in regards to, you know, leave our gross production percentage alone. So that's the other thing you got to deal with as well. But anyway, there is ongoing discussion. I just can't tell you today that there is a formed plan to talk about tonight.
Thank you, Representative Sears. Senator Daniels.
Thank you. I'll make a brief comment. And I just said FOIL. I may have meant Sequoia. Maybe Sequoia is a dependent school district. They're right next to each other, and I may have just misspoken there. So we're still an oil and gas state, and we have diversified our economy to a certain extent. But right now, we're the second largest play in the United States outside of Texas. This is a good thing. The problem with our economy is that when oil and gas does bad, we all do badly because so many jobs are tied to it. And when they don't have jobs, they don't generate as much income tax revenue. We don't spend as much money and generate sales tax revenue. And certainly you're not going to generate as much gross production tax revenue. So all these things are tied together. That is why, as we come out of this economic slump, there will be light at the end of the tunnel. We continue to do good governance, maximize the way we spend the money, and things will get better. But lots of things are more expensive than they used to be. Healthcare has just ballooned in the past 10 years, and a lot of what's being spent in education is going to the increase in healthcare benefits for our educators. So all these things are tied together. To point to any one specific thing as being the reason that we don't have revenue in Oklahoma is just not, you just need to look at it a little more broadly and realize how all these things are tied together.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. Representative Dunlap.
Can you summarize the question for me again?
Are you willing to raise taxes for oil and gas companies, or is it the current financial crisis caused by a drop in oil and gas tax revenues? How can you change the tax laws to avoid the problem? Or the state budget shouldn't even be tied to oil and gas.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know how we would separate tax revenue from oil and gas industry here in the state of Oklahoma. It is also, as has been mentioned, we need to continue to encourage the wise use of our bountiful resources here. And so that's something we have to be very careful about going forward. And this probably goes back to the gross production tax. Again, it's such a complicated issue when you talk about whose oil it is based on where it is geographically or how it's approached, either vertically or horizontally. And so we have to, in our dealing with that issue, figure out how we're going to handle that, how we're going to deal with the mineral owners, who gets what oil, what the producer gets, what we have to deal with all of that. If a currently producing oil field is being produced by a vertical well and it gets accessed by a horizontal well, you know, what happens in that case? So all of that is tied together in how we move forward in that regard. And a lot of you in this room know more about that than I do, but those are some of the things that are holding us back from being really clear on what's going to happen with the gross production tax. So,
thank you, Representative Dunlap. All right, now we have one directed, and it's her turn first, so to Senator Daniels in any case, and either of you can comment if you wish. Please explain why the Oklahoma Equal Opportunity Education Scholarship should not be repealed.
Okay, this is the I think it's about a $1.52 million cap tax credit scholarship where you can make a donation to a scholarship granting organization and direct that to a particular independent school, and you receive some credit against your Oklahoma taxes. It's a very small program, but it does it is considered, I think, a parental education choice program. It is successful in our state, successful in many states. There's that one, and then of course there's the Lindsay Nicole Henry Scholarship for Children with Disabilities. This year on both of those, we did a little tweaking on the one that where you make the donation to the Opportunity Scholarship Fund. We just made sure that all the tax credits available within that statute could be accessed, because there are some there for educational improvement. So they just said, if they're not accessed and used, then the Opportunity Scholarship Fund people can use those to their full extent. And then I 1.2, 2 million? I can't remember what the cap is. And then we made an adjustment to the Lindsay Nicole Henry by saying that if a child has been in the custody of the state and comes out, they can use that. And there was also some provision for children in foster care. So those are the only two tweaks we've made to those this year. They're very small, but significant to the people who use them. And therefore, I strongly support both of them.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. Do either of you have a comment?
No, she did.
Well, I'd like to make a comment. First of all, it's $5 million, and the one it's a $5 million cap. And right now it has about $1.5 million in it, both of them. There's two of them that are parallel running side by side. Quite frankly, I went to the speaker about 15 days ago and asked him if he'd let me develop a package of tax credits to repeal. And we could have put that one on the list, and I didn't. People have the right. It doesn't really take anything from public education. We have other credits. We have other exemptions and programs out there that people are allowed to put their tax dollars in, and that's what the people are doing in regards to this. They do get a tax cut back or a credit in regards to their income tax. But again, I think it's very well under control. And then we have the Nicole Henry Scholarship one, is kind of the same concept, which I think is doing a phenomenal job in the state of Oklahoma.
Thank you, Representative Sears. All right, Mr. Dunlap, this is a total local issue question. What are your thoughts about TIF District Number 11 that would divert dollars from education to pay for State Highway Turn Lane in near Eastland Center?
What a delightful question. Thank you. I am going to let my city councilor decide what is going to be the best. They have the best overall picture of that. I do think economic development is important. And so I want to see that happen, but I also don't want to see tax dollars go where they shouldn't be going. So I'm going to let my city councilor decide that for me. Thank you for the question.
We thank the question. Representative Sears, you have a comment on TIF?
I would absolutely have a comment. first of all, I want to answer as a state rep, and then I'm going to answer as a citizen of this community. First of all, as your state representative, that's part of our problem. I'm all about tax credits. I'm all about bringing industry into the state of Oklahoma. I get it. I understand it. We've got to have a level playing field. But you need to know in Oklahoma, we've let it get out of control. Senator Daniels, Representative Dunlap, we've been absolute champions in trying to slow down what's happening in the wind. Now, you know, I know every one of you are probably thanking us for doing that and appreciate that, but you got to understand, on the west side of the state, it's a complete different ball game. They fight just as tenacious to keep it as what we're fighting to do away with it. But it's gotten out of hand, and that's not only that one, there are others. So we need to always make sure that we're having a strong conversation and watching those tax credits. Now, as a personal citizen of Bartlesville, Oklahoma, I am very frustrated in this times that we are in right now, and I will leave it up to my city councilman as well, but I plan on calling him. I will leave it up to him as well. But I am very frustrated at the times that we are in, that we are diverting a tax TIF district is for a blighted area. I get that. I don't think putting this turn lane in out at Eastland Shopping Mall is a blighted area. And that's routing money away from not only local government, but education as well. I think we need to leave that up to the transportation funds. You pay good tax dollars for transportation needs in the state of Oklahoma. And that's what I would hope that they would route that away.
Did you have any comments, Senator Daniels?
Thanks. And I chaired the redevelopment committee, the TIF committee, when I was on the city council. So I do know a little bit about the act and, you know, the argument. But for this investment, you know, then property values will increase and ad valorem will increase and you will get a benefit in the long term. I don't know much about the details of this one yet. I haven't discussed it with my city councilman, so I will certainly, you know, ask and talk to him about that. And that'll be their decision.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. All right, Representative Sears, you have an easy question and a hard question, all in one very short question.
Right.
Why are we cutting education funding? And I think this may have something to do with the many young people in the audience, for the future leaders of America.
Why are we cutting
education funding for the future leaders of America?
You know, I don't know if I'll change anybody's mind in this room, but we're not cutting public education. Last year, I was the AB chairman. We had a $1.4 billion hole, and I kept education flat. Now, the superintendent of this school district and I have had numerous conversations. Flat to them and flat to me are two different things. I understand that. But the point is, we did not cut public education, and we have not cut public education. If you want to say to me why we're not putting more money in public education, that's a different question. But we're not cutting public education. I will tell you, when you had the revenue failure, not a person in this room, not an elected official, had anything in the world to do with that. The Constitution says that the money's not there, you can't spend it, and therefore you go back in and you don't have the money. You don't take money away from anybody, you don't get the money. It's just, you gotta have the money to operate. So no one cut that 7%. The money just didn't come into that downturn that we were having. So I will always take exception that we're cutting public education. Conversation needs to be, do we need to put more money in public education? And that is a fair statement and a fair discussion that we can have. And we will continue to do that once we right the ship in regards to what we're doing right now, using these one-time monies, apportionments off the top, tax credits. Again, I will not convince you that our tax cuts have not caused part of the problem. But there's just a lot of things that has I think I said in the debate on the floor on Wednesday when I had this, the perfect storm that lined up in regards to not enough money that to go to put into these programs. Now, when we did have $80, $90 barrel oil, these apportionments right off the top, they get paid no matter what. Transportation, $500 and some million. Oklahoma Promise this year is $70 million. 1017 ranges every year anywhere from $800 to $1 billion. These are, I'll call them lockbox programs, that the money goes straight to them. And when you pay them, then the tax credits, when you pay those, we don't have enough money to run state government. We have to have these reforms that we've been talking about here all night.
Thank you, Representative Sears. Senator Daniels.
I think Representative Sears answered it perfectly. I will just throw out some numbers here. The budget for common education in 17, FY17 was $2,426,000,000. After the shortfall, it was $2,409,000. The high mark for Common Ed was $2,531,000,000 in 2009, right as we hit the Great Recession, which we weathered in Oklahoma fairly well because of the strength of oil and gas. But then when the bottom fell out of those prices, we have experienced our own recession. The total education budget last year, because there are 11 divisions in the education budget, was $3,375,000,000. So it continues to be the bulk of the money that we spend. Doesn't mean that it doesn't deserve more, but certainly you need a growing economy, you need to reform the credits, we need to maximize every dollar we spend in every state agency, hence the performance audits, because the cost of everything continues to rise. And so we have to face that reality as a state. And but I certainly want to look at ways to improve the bottom line for all of our state agencies, particularly education.
Thank you, Senator Daniels. Representative Dunlap.
Thank you for the question. I will concur. The numbers are really interesting to look at when you consider, you can look at numbers in a lot of different ways. One of the things that I like to point out to people is that over the last 8 years, the growth in the health cost of taking care of our teachers has really consumed all of the extra money that we wanted to give to education. So in 2008, we were spending $220 million on health benefits. Now we're up to $500 million in health benefits. Those are things that we love to pay for our teachers. We have the best benefits program of any state, especially in the region. But something that we've wanted to do, which is increase per pupil expenditure, we haven't been able to do because of the growth of some of the costs of government and operating the system. Another question that, I mean, we love to see investment in the kids as well. And one of the things that we really want to do is make sure that the money being spent gets to the classroom. When you consider the number of students in a classroom, then you divide the total amount of appropriation by the number of students that are in those classes, you get somewhere from the state level this year about $8,000 from the state level, and then you add in local levels, and Bartlesville spends close to, depending on if you look at the weighted average daily attendance or the the mean average daily attendance, $10,000 a student per year. And so if you stick 20 of those kids in a classroom, that adds up to quite a bit of money, quite a bit more money than what we pay the teacher in that classroom. And so if we can somehow facilitate getting the investment that we're making into public education to the classroom, I think that's a wonderful way to show that we invest in our kids and that we are making that a priority for the future.
All right, 30 seconds left. All right, I'm supposed to say we didn't get to all the questions. PEEQ has provided at the tables outside contact information for your legislators. Please contact them about your questions that didn't get answered. The other thing you can do, if you leave the list of questions with them, they will ask the legislators at a time when they can grab them and corral them, and they will send the answers to you in the email updates. So please continue, because this is about you taking action, and you have to stay with it. If you have concerns that weren't addressed, you can't just drop them and say, well, they don't care. They care, but you have to keep on them like flies on a rib roast. Remember that. So for PEEQ and League of Women Voters, go out, do your duties as a citizen, and vote at the next election.
Thank you. Everybody.
Thank you all very much.
AM 1400, 93.3 FM K1. And again, this has been a presentation from the Bartlesville City Council. We have standing room only in this chamber through the hour of questioning. People lining both walls, people sitting on the floor, both in the front and back of the room. Thank you for joining us tonight as we look at education issues on AM 1400 K1. I'm Charlie Turnbulletti.
That's our broadcast of the Education Forum. You've heard League of Women Voters President Pat Netzer moderating tonight's forum and providing the answers, State Senator Julie Daniels and State Representatives Earl Sears and Travis Dunlap. PEEQ thanks you, as do we, for listening to our broadcast of tonight's forum. Issues will continue regardless of whatever is decided during this legislative forum. Teacher pay, school vouchers, the state support of schools, charter schools, homeschools, vouchers, and more will continue to be issues at least into the 2018 election. Thanks for listening to tonight's forum, and you can leave us your comments on the broadcast. Use the open mic feature on the Bartlesville radio app. We now join Cardinal Baseball in progress on AM 1400 K1, 93.3 FM. This has been a presentation of KWON News.
Send off by using the promo code Hewitt. Call 1-800-LIFE.
Really middle of the strike zone, according to where it was over the front of the plate, which is what matters. By the time